Chapter 3 Zanzibar. After talking with Selma, Sam and Remy took a catnap, then showered, changed clothes, and took their scooters down the coast road to Stonetown, to their favorite Tanzanian cuisine restaurant, the Ikundu Kifaru, Swahili for Red Rhino. Overlooking the waterfront, the Red Rhino was nestled between the old customs house and the Big Tree, a giant old fig that served as a daily hangout for small boat builders and charter captains offering day sails to Prison Island or Bawe Island. For Sam and Remy, Zanzibar, or Unguja in Swahili, personified Old World Africa. The island had, over the centuries, been ruled by warlords and sultans, slave traders and pirates. It had been the headquarters for trading companies and the staging area for thousands of European missionaries, explorers, and big game hunters. Sir Richard Burton and John Henning Speke had used Zanzibar as the base for their search for the source of the Nile. Henry Morton Stanley had begun his famous hunt for the wayward David Livingstone in the labyrinthine alleys of Stonetown. Captain William Kidd had reputedly sailed the waters around Zanzibar as both pirate and pirate hunter. Here, Sam and Remy found every street and courtyard had a story, and every structure a secret history. They never left Zanzibar without dozens of fond memories. By the time they pulled into the parking lot, the sun was dropping quickly toward the horizon, casting the sea in shades of gold and red. The scent of oysters on the grill drifted in the air. "Welcome back, Mr. and Mrs. Fargo," the valet called, then signaled for a pair of white-coated attendants, who trotted over and pushed the scooters away. "Evening, Abasi," Sam replied, shaking the valet's hand. Remy received a warm hug. They'd met Abasi Sibale on their first visit to Zanzibar 6 years earlier and had become fast friends, usually having dinner with him and his family at least once during their yearly visits. Abasi was never without a smile. "How are Faraja and the kids?" Sam asked.
"Happy and healthy, thank you. You will come to supper while you are here."
Remy smiled. Wouldn't miss it.
"I believe they are ready for you inside," Abasi said.
Just inside the door, the maitre d', Elimu, was waiting. He, too, had known the Fargos for years.
"Good to see you, good to see you. Your favorite table overlooking the harbor is ready."
"Thank you," Sam said. Elimu led them to a corner table lit by a red hurricane lantern and surrounded on two sides by open windows overlooking the waterfront. Below, Stonetown's streetlights were flickering to life.
"Wine, yes?" Elimu asked. "You would like the list."
"Do you still have that Pinot Noir, the Chamonix?"
"Yes, we have a 98 or a 2000.
Sam looked to Remy, who said, "I still remember the 98. "As the lady wishes, Elimu."
"Very good, sir."
Elimu disappeared.
"It's beautiful,"
Remy murmured, staring out over the ocean. "I couldn't agree more." She turned her head away from the window, gave him a smile, and squeezed his hand. "You got a little sun," she remarked. For some inexplicable reason, Sam Fargo burned oddly. Today, only the bridge of his nose and the tips of his ears were pink. Tomorrow they would be bronze.
"You're going to be itchy later."
"I'm itchy now."
"So, any guesses?" Remy asked, holding up the diamond coin.
It had spent the afternoon first sitting in a bowl of 10% nitric acid, followed by Sam's secret formula of white vinegar, salt, and distilled water, followed by a scrubbing with a soft bristle toothbrush. While many spots remained obscured, they could make out a woman's face in profile and two words, Marie and Réunion. These details they'd relayed to Selma before leaving the bungalow.
"Not a one," Sam said.
"An odd shape for a coin, though."
"Private minting, perhaps?"
"Could be. If so, it's well done. Nice clean edges, good tooling, solid weight." Elimo returned with the wine, decanted, poured for both of them, waited for their nods of approval, then filled their glasses. This particular Pinot Noir was South African, a rich red with hints of cloves, cinnamon, nutmeg, and something Sam couldn't quite place. Remy took a second sip and said, "Chicory." Sam's phone rang. He looked at the screen, mouthed "Selma," then answered. "Evening, Selma." Remy leaned forward to listen in.
"Morning for me. Pete and Wendy just got here. They're starting on the Tanzanian law angle."
"Perfect."
"Let me guess. You're sitting at the Ikondo Kifaru, staring at the sunset."
"Creatures of habit," Remy said.
"You have news?" Sam asked.
"About your coin. You have yourself another mystery."
Sam saw the waiter approaching and said, "Hold a minute." They ordered a Samaka Aiwa Kusonga and Wali, fish croquette and native rice with chapati bread, and for dessert, Ndizi no Custard, Zanzibar-style banana custard. The waiter left, and Sam unmuted Selma.
"Go ahead, Selma, we're all ears," Sam said.
"The coin was minted sometime in the early 1690s. Only 50 were made, and they never saw official circulation. In fact, they were a token of affection, for lack of a better term. The Marie on the coin's face is part of Sainte Marie, the name of a French commune situated on the north coast of Réunion Island."
"Never heard of it," Remy said.
"Not surprising. It's a little lump of an island about 400 miles east of Madagascar."
"Who's the woman?" Sam asked.
"Edelise Molyneux, the wife of Demont Molyneux, the administrator of Saint-Marie from 1685 to 1701. According to the stories, for their 10th anniversary, Demont had his private stock of gold melted down and minted into these Edelise coins."
"Quite a gesture," Remy said.
"The coins were supposed to represent the number of years Demont hoped they would spend together before dying. They came close. They both died within a year of one another, just shy of their 40th anniversary."
"So how did this one get all the way to Zanzibar?" Sam asked.
"Here's where truth gets mixed up with legend," Selma replied. "You've heard of George Booth, I assume."
"English pirate," Sam said.
"Right. Spent most of his time in the Indian Ocean and Red Sea. Started as a gunner aboard the Pelican around 1696, then aboard the Dolphin. Around 1699, the Dolphin was cornered by a British fleet near Réunion Island. Some of the crew surrendered. Some, including Booth, escaped to Madagascar, where Booth and another pirate captain, John Bowen, combined forces and hijacked the Speaker, a 450-ton, 50-gun slave ship. Booth was elected captain, and then around 1700 he took the Speaker to Zanzibar. When they went ashore for supplies, the landing party was attacked by Arab troops. Booth was killed and Bowen survived. From there, Bowen took the Speaker back to the waters around Madagascar before dying a few years later on Mauritius."
"You said the Dolphin was cornered near Réunion Island," Sam repeated. "How close to the Sainte-Marie commune?"
"A few miles offshore," Selma replied. "Legend says Booth and his crew had just finished raiding the commune."
"Having made off with the Adelaide's coins," Remy finished.
"So says the legend. And so said Demont Molyneux in an official letter of complaint to Louis XIV, the King of France."
"So let's play this out," Sam said. "Booth and the other escapees from the Dolphin take with them the Adelaide's coins, then meet up with Bowen. They then hijack the Speaker and head for Zanzibar, where they... what? Bury their booty on Chumbe Island? Dump it in shallow water for later recovery?"
"Or maybe the Speaker never got away," Remy added. "Maybe the stories are wrong. Maybe she was sunk in the channel."
"Half a dozen of one, six of the other," Selma replied. "Either way, the coin you found is from the Adelaide's lot."
"The question is," Sam said, "does our bell belong to the Speaker?"